Okay, Rich, welcome. Great having you. Thanks for agreeing to sit with us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, really, really happy. And of course, you are basically why we're here. And so let's start.
Well, I'm one of the people why we're here.
Yeah, well, that's what we're going to talk about. So we're going to start out with that anyway. And, you know, we're 35 years old. It's exciting that we're going to have a big celebration next year. And maybe we can share a little bit about that. But let's start from the beginning. What I understand, and I've heard a few stories along the way, was that this started at your dining room table. This is where you guys, I can just visualize, which is my own story, where there's papers everywhere and you're talking and going on. Is that true? Is this kind of how this all started?
That's true, but it's not the beginning of the story. And we didn't just, three guys just didn't gather at my house and start creating this. You want to know the backstory?
Yeah, no, I want to know as much as you can possibly help us get connected to.
Well, the backstory is that I went in a year before, so the first training was January of 1985, uh-huh. called Wild Man Weekend. And I had done a training called Understanding Yourself and Others in January of 1984. And it was my first experience dealing with the emotional side of myself. I had been in the Marine Corps, I'd been an engineer for General Motors, and emotions or anything interior was not anything I wanted anything to do with. So I ended up at this workshop and called Understanding Yourself and Others in Milwaukee. And I was a fish out of water. I locked up. The most they were able to get me to do emotionally was to do jumping jacks while saying the word chocolate and maybe smiling a little. That was my introduction to internal emotional work, and I absolutely hated it because it was so far from anything. I couldn't figure it out. I was a chemistry and math major in college. But something happened, and I kept going back every month. They have a weekend every month, and it's like, oh, this is actually cool. And
so you hated it and kept going back.
Exactly. I hated it, but there was a crack, and it's like there's something these crazy people are doing that is, and it was opening something up in me. It was opening up my heart. No room for hearts in General Motors or in the Marine Corps. So during that time, I met a fella named Bill Kauth, and he said, we should start a men's workshop. And I thought Bill was very weird. I mean, he knows that to this day. He was a card-carrying hippie, and I was, at the time, I was an engineer wearing three-piece suits, and we came from different worlds. Anyway, he kept bugging me, and I said, I don't want to do it. Finally, he convinced me to fly from Milwaukee to California to do a workshop called Men, Sex, and Power, which is a critical part of the story, because at that workshop, where there were 150 men, there's a story leading up to it, but very briefly, I wouldn't sign a piece of paper, and they wouldn't let me into the workshop. Finally, they let me in, and the guy running it asked me, why didn't you sign it? And my response was, I don't know you, and I don't trust you. You know, like, why the hell did you? They wanted to take videos of us and show them.
Oh, okay.
And I said, no, you're not going to do that. And so then he said something that changed my life, and it's why I'm here right now. He said, have you ever trusted anyone in your life?
Well, so he asked the question.
And that was like the sledgehammer or the axe. It just, I collapsed on the floor sobbing. And so something, because I had this realization, no, I'd never trusted anybody. And somehow that was my psyche, my spirit, my body knew that was horrible. So there was a 2-day workshop, and on the second day, I said to Bill, you know, because Bill was there with me, Bill Kyle, I said, you know, we could do a better workshop than this. Now, understand that I had done maybe 4 or 5 or 6 of these other workshops as a lowly assistant. I've now done this workshop, and all of a sudden I'm saying we could do a better workshop. So now, and so something, it can be talked in many different ways, but something cracked open in me. Mm-hmm. Something that I didn't know was there. It's like, yeah, we're going to do, we're not only going to do the workshop that you want, Bill, but we're going to do a much better one than this one.
So now, here's this Marine who's working for General Motors in a 3-piece suit, talking to this hippie about how you're going to do a better thing than you just went to after you spend all these times before jumping rope and eating chocolate. I like this story. This is good.
Jumping jacks, right. Yeah. And I had gotten into it more in understanding yourself and others, but still I was just a brand neophyte. I was, in terms of the warrior training now, I was an experienced rookie, you know.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of us in the project like that, you know, just give us a couple experiences and we'll run the program.
Yes. So now, because my house happened to be strategically located where it was easy for all three of us to get to, we started meeting at my house.
So how did Ron Herring get in this? Was he at this workshop?
Ron and Bill had been long-term friends. Mm-hmm. Bill was from very much counterculture, very much a hippie, and all that meant. And so we're talking late 84 by now. Mm-hmm. Ron was a professor at University of Wisconsin. So he had one foot in the academic world, and he had one foot in the world that Bill inhabited, the mm-hmm. counterculture world. So it was interesting. So I was in the uptight world. Ron was sort of in both, and Bill was in the, you know.
So it sounds like it's possible to believe that Ron was sort of a bridge between you and Bill.
He was, and that's exactly right. In mm-hmm. fact, Bill and I would get in these fierce arguments, and Ron often could see both sides. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question on that fierce argument.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're sitting at the table creating this weekend, and you guys are getting into this drama between each other, arguments between each other.
Yeah.
And Ron's there facilitating that. How much of the content of the program came as a result of what you guys worked through?
I think that's a great question, Paul. I think not so much the content, but the what we learned was how to work together as a team, and mm-hmm. and you know, Bill and I were from different cultural social worlds, mm-hmm. And what we learned is that a lot of our arguments had to do with unexpressed emotional angst that we would keep under the table, mm-hmm. So there were times when we just do these, and Ron wasn't always a facilitator, but so then we would, one of us would become emotionally honest. You know, what's going on for me is I'm really upset about this and I'm feeling left out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that three of us would then, you know, oh yeah, me too. And I'm this. And what happened after that is the work content became very easy because we moved past this, we called it the gremlins under the table. You know, they're not going to let work get done unless we bring them on the table, talk about them and give them their space. So, mm-hmm. so the content, and though that was built in to the, I don't know, call it the tenor, the sense of what we were doing without affecting the actual content. In other words, to be emotionally honest turned out to be how we were able to get the work done, and mm-hmm. that showed up in the training big time. But we didn't say, oh, gee, we're gonna create a process about this.
Yeah, well, my take on what you've shared so far, in the way you just got there, there was a lot of that intuitive, you know, guidance from something inside of yourself. So well, it makes sense that what you're saying kind of came into the project, not through intellectual, but through experiential.
Right. Yeah, this was... It was not an intellectual exercise. Do you want me to keep going with this?
Yeah. Let's go just for a little bit longer, and then I want to move beyond the beginning.
All right. So now we've agreed to sit at the kitchen. You know, I think it was maybe by September. I think this workshop in California was in August. So in September, we sat together and we said, we are three of us. And I think about this, it's like, I can't believe we did it. We said, in January 1985, we are going to hold a training for men. Had no idea where it was going to be, had no idea what the content would be, but we were determined. So for the next three to 4 months, we sat down pretty regularly. Sometimes, the guys would stay overnight at my house on the weekends. And we cobbled together what is the new warrior training, much of which exists to this day, much more refined. But uh-huh. So the process is fascinating to me. What we did was, okay, what are we gonna do first? I don't know. So one of us would say, oh, I have an idea how we should start this. And so Bill said, we'll greet the men warmly before they go in the building. And if the other two didn't object, we say, okay, great. And then, okay, what are we gonna do once they get inside? I think we should take their names away and give them numbers. I said that, and that's okay. Okay, so Tosi, you got that one. And that's literally how the whole thing was put together. Then we got to do this, and then we got to do that, and it was there was no guiding principle. We were not. It's a mistake. There's a lot of folks think we were using Jungian principles or that. So we didn't have any source material. We were just creating. What do we need next? And then at some point we need to have a process where we ask men to go deep. And then, well, that we need a sense of a mission. Why are we here? But there was no overriding goal. There was no template, nor was there any reference. We didn't have any material. So that's how it got put together.
Wow. So when was the first one?
January of 85.
Okay, so January.
Robert Bly was the other guy. Robert Bly had not published his book, Iron John. That wasn't available for years.
This was your own deal. So when was the first meeting you went to where you did jumping jacks and ate chocolate?
January of 84. So 12 months.
So this is, I just want to note this. So
sure.
In 1 year you went from thinking, what the hell is this? And kept going back to starting the Mankind Project. 1 year. We'll come back to that.
Accurate. After that first one in January 84, I thought these were the stupidest people I'd ever met. They basically wanted you to emotionally say things. I'm like,
They probably wondered.
I was a mathematician, you know.
They probably wondered a little bit about you, by the way. But
they did.
Yeah, that's right. So, all right. Okay. 35 years later, here we are. You and I are sitting here talking. You're still engaged and involved in MKP. You're on the curriculum committee. You're on the lead operating circle. I don't know all the things you're doing. You meet with me twice a week to make sure I haven't lost my mind. And you're supportive of so many men in leadership and not in leadership. You have hundreds and hundreds of friends that go way back to the beginning. What do you think about what you created?
My hesitation is the sense that I do not feel like we created what's become the new warrior training. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that way. The best description that works for me is there were three guys wandering around in the desert, lost, and they found a baby crying. In the desert somewhere, or in the woods, somewhere lost, and we collectively said, you know, there's something about this baby that we ought to take care of. So we took the baby and nurtured it and helped it grow up. So the credit that I feel appropriate for me is not so much a creating, but in nurturing something that somehow already existed. Mm-hmm. And that nurturing was a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work. Well,
seeing almost 35 years later, seeing the benefits and still hearing men going through the training and being involved in Mankind Project, There's a way that it's not even, that I can't even grasp how the impact. It, you know, I just talked to a man who went through a couple years ago, and he said it fundamentally changed his life. It's like, okay. So,
yeah. Well, I think that, I think, what's not lost on me is that what you just said was really touched me around the crying baby, nurturing the crying baby, and I'm kind of touched by this piece that here's this hippie, here's this Marine man who's working in American organization with a three-piece suit, General Motors. Then there's this guy who's a professor and leaning over into the hippie world, who show up together, and in less than a year, they create this program that's living on in its different stages of growth and change. We're no longer worried about whether we're going to be here next year. We're more concerned about who are we going to be in the next 35 years. So we're clear. We're clear about we're ready. We're here now. We don't have to worry about that. But maybe the crying baby was that part in each of the three of you that was wanting something, and you were able to listen to that place, work between the differences of yourselves.
To
create this piece, which is exactly what's happened for me. That part inside of me that was hungry, that was empty, that was looking for the ability to really nurture myself, that part of myself that wanted to be friends with everybody, could see the similarities as well as the differences. This training and this work that we're doing, all of us who have this, are having that same experience. So the magic in this, Rich, to me, is that's all we have to do, is get into that deeper self. If you told this story, which you just did, but if you told this story to another group and said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to create this program from nowhere. And by the way, it's going to start in January. They would tell you you're out of your mind, and you really were, because you were in your heart.
Well, you know, I mean, think if those of us who are old enough, think back to what was going on in the mid 80s. There wasn't. This is a touchy feely kind of experience.
And there
wasn't a whole lot of that going back in 80s.
Well, I want to thank you again for joining me, and I'm sure we'll have some more conversations along the way here for all of us and the men and all the other people who are going to be able to see this. The other part that touches me is your personal experience has been mine. Something sort of was going on inside of me, and I started doing these what I thought to be pretty weird things about 10 or 12 years ago. Things that, by the way, my wife had been doing for a while, and I thought she was nuts. Now we're closely aligned in these different pieces. And the thing that is interesting to me, and I'm sure other men on this call, watching this will share this with us, is that there's nothing you can do once you start this road. You know, you kept going back, even though you thought it was crazy. And then you went to this other thing, and then from this other workshop you went through, you're ready to change the world. You're ready to do this wonderful thing. Well, that's what I've been feeling. I'm being humbled along the way.
But, well, let me just we weren't ready to change the world. What the original plan was, we just wanted to create some men's groups in the city of Milwaukee. That was it. There was the changing the world didn't come till many years later. The fact that we were doing initiation came years later. So it was just going to be a local thing for a while.
Well, interesting that would happen in Milwaukee, because that was, I don't know back then, but I'm assuming that Milwaukee was pretty conservative in those days.
Well, it's, it's basically a working class town. Mm-hmm. Beer, brats, and baseball, I think, is what that's what you do. So an odd place to birth something like this.
Some amazing work, not just the Mankind Project, has come out of Central America. It's really kind of amazing. And those of us who were born and raised in Southern California get all the juice about how weird we are down there. But okay. Well, thanks, Rich. And, you know, again,
thank you, Paul. Thank you for the work you're doing too. Thank you.
You're really welcome. And thanks for being a person that helped me change in my life and grow up into myself and continue to do that. What you didn't tell me along the way was that which is what I just shared a minute ago, is that it's kind of like being in the mafia. Once you get in, you can't get out. You're just, it's just an ongoing journey, and it's a wonderful journey.
I'm not sure I like that.
Yeah, I know. I probably shouldn't use that, but it's kind of, that's what they say, you know, is that when you get in, anyway, that's dumb. I don't know. It's just funny. So it is a situation where I don't see myself ever not being engaged in MKP in some fashion because of how it's changed my life. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right.